Hello. If any of you are new listeners are listening in because you discovered an interesting bookmark somewhere in Germany, England, Scotland, or Sweden, we'd like to welcome you. Renee has been traveling in these parts and leaving these bookmarks, and it's our own form of guerrilla marketing. So welcome to the podcast.
Is there a writing craft book on your bedside table? Has it been there for a while?
Do you keep meaning to get past chapter 2, or chapter 1, or just the first page?
Then the Words to Write By podcast is for you. Hi, I'm Renee. I teach composition and creative writing to college students. My background is in poetry, but I'm working on my memoir.
And I'm Kim. I'm trained as a science journalist, but now I'm trying my hand at short fiction. Each week we'll be tackling a chapter of some well-known, but perhaps not so well-read, writing craft book.
Together, we'll uncover brilliant insights, face the hard truths, and totally disagree when the author is wrong.
This is our podcast, after all.
And then, we're going to take what we learn and apply it to our own writing.
By doing the book's suggested exercises.
We're inviting you to read along, or just tune in for the Cliff Notes version.
We're committed to improving our own craft, one writing advice book at a time, and we'd love for you to join us.
Guten Tag, herzlich willkommen. I should have looked up the German to another episode of
Werden zu schreiben.
Is that what it is?
Renee is joining us from Germany today, so we'll see how the connection works for this recording.
Yes, I've been all over Germany. We're in Rothenburg now, and yes, pretzels are all they're cracked up to be.
And are you writing?
A little bit. Oh, actually, no, I am writing. I am taking a daily account of our travels. I mean, I've got quite a few pages of the restaurants we went to and, you know, 10-star reviews of the food and what we ordered and where we went and our favorite things. I don't know what I'm going to do with it. I want to make like a little scrapbook out of it, but
I think there was a couple trips where my husband and I would write a travel journal together and we'd swap it back and forth.
Oh, that's fun. What did you do with them afterwards?
We still have them. I've looked through them sometimes. It's kind of neat. Writing a journal while you're traveling is a brilliant idea because you're seeing so many new things and you're going to forget them if you don't.
We realized when we'd done our travels before that we didn't have any accounts of things. Like we had forgotten where we had been and where we'd going, and I don't know whose idea it was, probably Max's, that we should keep a journal. And I went, great idea. You know, sometimes you get brain fogged. You're just out there and you've seen so many things and you're tired and you're at the cafe and you're just staring at the other person and they're just staring at you and you don't even want to talk. You just want to drink your coffee. And it's great. You can pull out the journal and give you something to do.
Better than scrolling on your cell phone.
It is definitely better than scrolling on your cell phone. Und du?
Und mich? Was hast ich bin up to? My German is very good for certain small words, but grammar is horrible. Anyway, I am trying to get into chapter 3 of the new novel I'm working on. I've lost that initial enthusiasm, so I feel like I need to draw on some Ray Bradbury advice. And I need to just write a lot more words each day. And with any luck, it will flow from there.
His work ethic, man, I definitely respect it. It was very workhorse, but he seemed to enjoy it.
And with that, we will go into our kind of wrap it up episode for Bradbury's Zen in the Art of Writing, which has been a delight to read now.
Yeah, totally. This was a good book. And for listeners coming in on this episode, this is maybe a good one to start with if you just want a general summary of the book and our general findings. But we go into much, much, much more detail on the first episode of the Ray Bradbury Zen and the Art of Writing.
It's time we said goodbye to Ray Bradbury. We spent a fair amount of time reading Zen and the Art of Writing, and today we'll tell you what it's about, what it meant to us personally, and how you, the reader, can get the most out of reading this book. And then we'll give Bradbury a good send-off with our favorite quotes from the book. And then, turning to something new, we have Jack M. Bickham's Scene and Structure. Renee's going to give us a bit of context for this book, and then I have an interview with Kristen Tate, an editor who has read this book and can tell us a little more about what's inside. And now, the episode.
What would you tell people this book is about?
I thought this book was about the writing process and unlocking one's subconscious in the creative process. It's also kind of like the origin stories of Bradbury's popular published famous works like Fahrenheit 451.
I agree. I felt it was very much a how I made it, a look into Ray Bradbury's mind from less of an academic standpoint, but more of a, these are the secrets of my writing. This is what I feel is really important. And then you as a potential writer or a aspirational writer can look and say, this is the nuts and bolts of how he did it.
Yeah.
I suspect part of being an established writer who's very successful means that at least 40% of your questions are, how do you write such and such?
Right. How did you get your ideas?
How did you find time to do this? What was the secret of your success? So.
And his stories were very imaginative. He had some crazy ideas because they were very mind-bending sci-fi. So where do those ideas come from? And he did a really good job of them.
Right. I think that this kind of moves into what we personally got out of it. The whole word association exercise he had at the beginning where you draw the list, that was a cool exercise. I dropped the story idea I got from that because I started working on this other one, but I had that list and I think I'm going to go back to it at some point and see what else I can find from it.
Yeah, there's things in there that I definitely want to mine for things that are important that I didn't realize were important, like things to emphasize maybe in my own writing in my memoir.
Was there anything personally you got out of this book?
I got a picture, a very clear picture of inspiring writer's work ethic. Like when a person is working as a writer and you wonder, well, what kind of shifts do they do? You know, he did those 6-hour shifts and that is work. And it's like, okay, this is somebody who's makes his money off of his writing and supports a family.
And buys houses in California.
For what was it? $3,000 or some craziness? Yeah. And also I really like the powerful strategy he had for unlocking the subconscious with the word associations. Like I would never have thought to do something like that. But after doing it, you realize these are the things that are important to you. Those words wouldn't come to mind. And so clearly those values need to be in your work.
Mm-hmm. I totally agree with you on the work ethic approach. Like this was one of those, okay, so you really want to be serious about being a writer. You actually do need to do these things and not just talk about doing these things, but you need to be there doing the writing and other techniques, like other practices, the reading 3 different things each day and the taking yourself physically away from everything else to write in a quiet place. He's given me a blueprint that if I follow, I will have a level of success. Now, whether I can follow it or not, that remains to be seen. But it's there.
Yeah. And I like that you brought up the menu for the reading. That I'm still doing that. I love it. I love, love, love. You're reading a short story a day, a piece of creative nonfiction a day, a poem a day. It's a great way to keep up on your reading, but also it's like me time. You know, his system is like, you know, you're always tapping into your interests and keeping your work close to your value system. And making it relevant just for yourself. You're not chasing the market. You're showing up to the desk every day and you're feeding your muse.
And he made it sound fun.
Yeah.
It wasn't drudgery. It actually sounded like a pretty awesome way to live your life.
Yeah. With gusto.
Gusto.
That's a great word. So what recommendations would you give people for reading this book now that we've gone through it?
I mean, I think Phil's comment that it's not a book for how to physically write is important because if somebody was looking for that, they want to go somewhere else. But my biggest recommendation is read the first few chapters twice because we had to do it for our podcast, but I think you get so much more if you read those first few chapters more than once.
Definitely. Or read them slowly.
Yeah. Or read them out loud.
Read them out loud. Yeah, he's got a beautiful language. He talks in metaphor. So sometimes you might miss a piece of instruction that he's giving. He also has a bullet point in his advice. So you want to read slowly so you can figure out how to utilize what he's doing.
Mm-hmm. Any other recommendations?
Yeah. So I thought the best chapters were The Joy of Writing and New Ghosts from an Old Mind. I think it was called Keeping and Feeding the Muse, Investing Dimes. I'm actually going to put these four chapters in my creative writing reader for both my students and myself. I actually keep a reader where I collect scenes and dialogue and other things and make notes on them. So when I'm writing my scenes, I read through them. I'm actually going to take these four chapters and just have them at the ready to remind myself that I need to keep going. But I think these would be wonderful for a new writer, like a young writer. They're so inspiring and non-judgmental, and they really makes it accessible mm-hmm. to everybody who wants to write. I would like to impart that to my students. So I'm going to give them the gift of Bradbury.
And along with the chapters that you are going to, you know, keep and transmit to others, are there any chapters that you could say that a reader could skip?
Oh, yes. Oh, my. I think we both agreed on these ones, too, or in our other episodes. The Shooting Haiku in a Barrel was a rather pointless chapter, although we did get a cool activity out of it, but we really had to, like, figure out what to do when we did that one. What was the one preceding that one?
The Secret Mind. And I also think that On the Shoulders of Giants is, I can see someone enjoying On the Shoulders of Giants because it really was this wondrous new thing. And that was delightful, but
definitely did.
But they aren't going to help you inspire you to write.
It was kind of a weird chapter.
Uh-huh. I think it would be better to give extra attention to the first half of the book and read it carefully and just skip the end. If you're looking at managing your time, reading the initial chapters twice and skipping the second half is definitely worth it. I do think that the final essay was pretty good too.
Yeah. Well, I don't know if it was the best for last, but he saved the title of the book for last. Mm-hmm. Zen and the Earth. And you can also, not to, you know, take money away from whoever owns the Ray Bradbury collections and stuff, but you can get this book for free online. You just type it into Google, PDF at the end, and you'll find it online. So there's no need to buy it, which is always nice.
It helps. Although I find that a paper version of a book, of an advice book, works better for me for reading.
Yeah.
Because I can mark it up and stuff. It's also, I'm sure, tons of used copies of this floating around.
Yeah, totally. But don't buy it new. So say, okay, somebody's on this book and we tell them which chapters, but what mindset should they bring to the book? What are the expectations a reader should have when they come into this book?
It helps to have read Bradbury yourself. Like if you weren't familiar with his stories, this book would make less of a connection. So if you've already read some of his works, I think that probably is the best mindset to take to this.
Yeah, I would totally agree. If you haven't read any Bradbury, you know, Fahrenheit 451 is good because everyone normally has to read it. But, you know, that one short story collection, The Illustrated Man, is a really good way to just dip into some really Bradbury, where he's like at the top of his game.
Or The Martian Chronicles is also another great one. Or like that radio drama you heard, Dandelion Wine. If you're familiar with the kind of works he wrote, then you'll appreciate seeing into his mind to figure out how he wrote them.
Yeah. And also, you know, I think it's important to keep in mind, this is the golden age of science fiction. You know, the writer, they were right with the sensibilities of the time and they were making it up as they went along. And we wouldn't be this far in science fiction without them. But keep in mind that, you know, they had different sensibilities back then.
Mm-hmm.
A lot of his advice is great because it doesn't really matter. Like it's a universal advice for the process. It's not really wrong.
Creativity hasn't changed. Writing styles and writing tastes have changed.
Right.
But since he didn't actually cover any of those, you know, nuts and bolts, this work works really well.
So that takes me to what I would tell a reader before they pick this up is don't expect any nuts and bolts. You're not going to get any grammar and you're not going to get very specific advice. or any rules. Again, it's a lot of read slowly, get into his mind, and you're kind of picking up his philosophy.
This book won't teach you how to write the words that Ray Bradbury wrote, but it'll teach you how to write in the mindset that Ray Bradbury wrote.
Definitely.
With the Gardner book, we had a bunch of vocabulary. Were there any vocabulary words that you took out of this?
I'm going to double down on the gumption.
Gusto.
I'm going to double down on the gusto. I really like the gusto. It's like you really got to just go in there. And I just think of it like a heavyweight fight. You just go at it. You don't think of it too hard. And that's good for people like me that really overthink things. So I really liked gusto. How about you, Kim?
I think we should remember Mr. Electrico. And a Mr. Electrico moment. Because that is such a cool idea. And I think that it'll be really awesome if I'm reading somebody else's experience to see if they had a Mr. Electrico moment.
Yeah. I should put that in my, you know, like you have the praise or not, sorry, not the praise. This book's dedicated to.
Uh-huh.
You should just write, these are my Electrico moments.
Or you can say, I dedicate this book to so-and-so, my Mr. Electrico.
My Mr. Electrico. That's right. That's right. So yeah, I give this book, if we, you know, I don't know if I'm rating it, but if we did a scale of 1 to 5, I'd give it a 4.5.
I would say that if we had to stack our books in order, clearly this one comes before Gardner's book in the listing.
By far. Gardner makes you not want to write. Discouraging and kind of mean, gatekeepy. Bradbury's like, come one, come all. Everyone's a writer, see?
We can all have fun doing it.
Gusto! Yeah.
You were suggesting that we pick some favorite quotes from this book. Do you have those ready?
Maybe, did I?
And now we pause the recording while Renee goes and
finds. While Renee looks for things, I think I'm just going to pull from the Muse chapter. I like the quote. We stuff ourselves with these impressions and experiences and our reactions to them. Into our subconscious go not only factual data, but reactive data. Our movement toward or away from the sensed events. These are the stuffs, the foods on which the muse grows. This is the storehouse, the file to which we must return every waking hour to check reality against memory and in sleep to check memory against memory. I felt that was such an apt, beautiful way of describing how when we read and we just go through life, we are continuously like storing all of this stuff for the muse. You know, a lot of people think, oh, if I only read a little bit more, or if I only do this a little bit more or whatever, there's no like one trigger thing you do that's going to get you to sit there. It's all of those things, but you have to continuously feed it and it'll just come when it comes. To me, that felt very accurate. It's like, yeah, I can feel that. And also I like, you know, as a teacher, the importance of reading. What was your favorite?
In a similar one, I found this one was in Zen and the Art of Writing, because I think you're talking there about something that could actually be a guiding principle that you do. And I found, and work itself after a while takes on a rhythm. The mechanical begins to fall away. The body begins to take over. The guard goes down. What happens then? Relaxation. And I think that as I'm struggling to make sure I write down the words and I put out the stuff, I should remember that part of writing every day is to train my body to do it.
Mm-hmm.
And it's going to be hard at first, but I just need to keep that one in mind when I sit down to write, that part of the goal is to write something wonderful, but part of the goal is just to write.
Yeah.
And then for a more, just a fun one, I liked, you must stay drunk on writing so reality cannot destroy you.
That's a good one.
Yeah.
Yes. I really like that one. I'm glad you found that quote because I kind of forgot about it.
It's pithy. It's got a wonderful flow. It's got something that's a little bit like in your face surprising. Just, it's a good quote.
I think it's good too, especially for people who are writing like things that are just like emotionally hard to write about. that in that chapter, he was talking about how like we write because things have happened to us and we have to make sense of them. And it's through these things that we become storytellers. And in that way, it's kind of writing is the saving your life. You need it as a form of like self-therapy.
Yeah, exactly. And now, as Monty Python would say, and now for something completely different.
So next up, we are going to be reading a book. Maybe is not as famous as you would think, but a lot of people reference stuff in this. So we thought it was important. It's called Scene and Structure by Jack M. Bickham. It has a 4.1 out of 5 on Goodreads. So you know it's got to be good. This comes in a series of books by Reader's Digest. It was the Elements of Fiction Writing series. It was included in a series of books by different authors, mostly geared towards writing commercial fiction. Characters and Viewpoints by Orson Scott Card. Conflict, Action, and Suspense by somebody named William Noble. Plot by Anson Dibble. That was another sci-fi author. One who went to Iowa, actually. Description by Monica Wood. Dialogue by Lewis Tufko. Actually, that was kind of a turn away from the commercial fiction and poet. Setting, so two in the series was by Jack Bickham. Voice and Style, Manuscript Submission, which I'm sure is outdated by now. Beginning, Middles, and Endings by Nancy Kress. And Conflict and Suspense by James Scott Bell, who's also written lots and lots of craft books. His most famous, I think, is How to Write Your Novel from Beginning to End. I do appreciate that it seems as if half of these books in the series were written by women. So that's pretty cool. So who is this Jack Bickham guy? He was born in 1930 and he died in 1997. He published 75 novels. Holy cow. Two of his books were made into movies. One was The Apple Dumpling Gang, which sounds familiar. I swear I know it, but I'd never seen it. And another one, Baker's Hawk, which again, I've never heard of. He was a professor at the University of Oklahoma in the Herbert School of Journalism. He wrote some of those Wildcat O'Shea Western series under the name Jeff Clinton. Six craft books. He's done a lot. He made a career of writing. So that is this next book that we are going to be reading, reviewing, and doing the activities for. Although it doesn't seem like it's a popular book or one people have heard of, a lot of writers, we would be surprised, a lot of writers, especially ones who do podcasts, follow a lot of his methods. So it's very structural, and I think our listeners are going to get a lot out of it, especially if you need some help with structuring your scenes.
On today's podcast, we have Kristen Tate. She's the owner and lead editor at The Blue Garret, an editorial service that helps authors transform their work from rough draft to finished book. She writes a weekly newsletter for Word Workers full of craft advice, cheerleading, and personal reflections on how to balance life, work, and words. And one other thing she has on her website is over 50 reviews of writing craft books. So we thought she'd be perfect for a quick interview on the latest craft book that we're going to be doing, which is Scene and Structure by Jack M. Bickham. Hi, Kristen. Thank you so much for coming.
Oh, thanks for having me on. I'm excited to talk about this book and about writing craft books in general.
What made you decide to include this book on your book reviews last year?
Oh, that's a good question. So I think this is one of those kind of lesser known books that tends to be talked about amongst editors and other folks in the business. It's one of those books that is not, so it's older now. It's actually kind of just looking at the copyright date. It's from 1993. But unlike a book like Stephen King's On Writing is, you know, perennially popular and is always on those lists of top 10 writing craft books you should read, or Anne Lamott's Bird by Bird. I love both of those books. However, you know, if you're looking for a book that's really going to teach you how to do new things on the page or to fix a mess that you've gotten yourself into, I actually don't think either one of those books is going to help you. They're really good for mindset and for inspiration. And this book by Jack Bickham is like one of those books that really gets down into the toolbox and goes into a lot of detail about how scenes work. And so I had it recommended to me by a few different folks. And so I, you know, after hearing that from multiple people that I respected, I decided to put it on my list. And I'm really glad I did.
When you were reading this book for your review, were there any aha moments or anything that really clicked with you?
Yes, absolutely. Well, there were two things. Kind of his big concept throughout the book is that cause and effect is really the engine behind your book. And that was a concept I had encountered before. I think I read Lisa Crohn's book, Wired for Story, which is also excellent, is really focused on cause and effect and how to use that in your plots. And I think this book goes a little bit further than that one in terms of showing you how to make that work on the page. So the big aha moment for me was what he calls sometimes response, sometimes internalization. So he's talking about what happens like after the drama. So after the scene part is a sequel. And this is where you get your interiority, you get your reflection. This is where your protagonist is taking some time to kind of reset after whatever fireworks may or may not have happened in the previous scene, and making the next decision that's going to drive you to the next scene. And so he's really zeroed in on those, what we think of as the more quiet parts and how important they are in fueling the next loud, visible part. And I think there's not a lot of writing craft books that really pay attention to how those quiet, like interior or summary parts function.
Good. Now I'm even more excited to read the book. What kind of writers would you recommend this book to? And would you have any caveats when you're making a recommendation?
Absolutely. So I think, and you can tell this from kind of opening chapters, he's definitely coming from a kind of commercial fiction background. And I would say even beyond that, this book is really focused in on action genres, right? So thriller writers, mystery writers, anyone who has a kind of more dramatic plot will really benefit from this book. Personally, I think that it's helpful for all writers to have these kinds of tools. But, you know, if you're writing a kind of quieter, more introspective plot or a kind of more experimental shape that doesn't follow the kind of classic rising action, climax, falling action shape, this book might be less beneficial.
Okay. Well, thank you so much. This has been a great interview. We will be seeing you at the upcoming San Francisco Writers Conference.
I look forward to it. It's going to be a great conference. Excited to be back in person.
Yes. So I think that's our show. Thank you guys so much for listening.
Thank you, Alfie to Zan. And don't forget to head over to Patreon.
Yes. We won't have any extras this week for a bonus podcast, but if anyone's read this book, just chime in. We'll have a link from our show notes. And you can support us on Patreon. Becoming a member, that helps pay for our podcast fees. And Renee, how else can they support us?
You can write us a really cool review and we will read the air. So if you can go to Apple Podcasts and leave us a review, that'd be great.
And another way that you can support us emotionally is if you are attending the San Francisco Writers Conference that's coming up at the end of July, we will be there and we would love to meet you in person. So if you're there, let us know and we'll get together.
And I also want to thank everybody who attended our awesome workshop on starting a podcast. Everyone seemed to love it and we're ready to go on the road with it. We'll do it again.
Absolutely. We got the material now.
It was very successful.
It was a lot of fun.
Yes. Yes. It was a ton of fun. And thank you again, San Jose Women's Club.
Yes. Okay. Well, we will be back in 2 weeks with our first couple of chapters of Jack Bickham's book. Bye-bye.
Cheers.
Words to Write By is produced by Renee Nelson and Kim Smith-Adam. Our theme music is Roll Back the Carpet by Cool Cat Music. Have a great day. Through the beauty of editing, no one will ever know that this happened.